When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
The podcast with Dan Gardell and Greg Evans.
Hello and welcome back to 1874, the podcast. I'm your host, Dan Bardell, joined by The Athletic's Jacob Tanswell to go over West Ham United 1, Aston Villa 1. And we'll also look if there's anything else that we can talk about as Villa approach the international break in fourth place in the Premier League, albeit I'm very, very delighted to have got out of West Ham with a point. This show is sponsored by NordVPN. If you go to 1874.io/NordVPN, you'll get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and you'll also get 4 months for free. And the good news is there's no risk attached, because if you're not happy, Nord offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. Jacob, it's probably the worst away ground. I think Villa fans hate going to West Ham, one, because we don't really ever seem to do very well there, but two, because you seem so far away from the action. Is it the same for the press? Ian Taylor posted a photo and he looked miles away from the pitch, and you know, if he hasn't got his glasses on, I know he needs his glasses. That would have been big trouble for Villa TV watchers.
Yeah, so I've probably been about 5 or 6 times in the press now during the COVID season and with fans in as well. So I've got to see an array of different types of games. But if honestly, getting for a press guy, it is virtually, it may make it as difficult as you can to get through, because you've got to go around this stadium. You've got to go through a certain way. If you don't go through that certain way, you've got to go around the stadium again. It's like going through Heathrow in terms of baggage and the amount of people that check your bags, and then you get told to go up to one flight of stairs, but it's actually another different type of stairs. There's just so many empty halls as well, actually, inside the stadium. It's very odd. But eventually it takes about, I don't know, 35 minutes maybe to get in, actually get settled. And then once you move up to the top, you're obviously really far away. And every time I go to West Ham, I put it down for the first couple of occasions as it's just been a flat game. But yesterday just felt like, when the teams were coming out, it felt like a bit of a friendly. Like, I didn't really feel that buzz or that nerves that, you know, that you want, you know, Villa to do well, or, you know, there's a real competitive game happening. It was very quiet. You could hear the shouts on the pitch. Good job the Villa fans were there, to be honest with you, because if it wasn't, I think it would have been really difficult. And there's no offence to West Ham fans. They're great when it's, you know, it's just virtually impossible for them, because the atmosphere is really bad, because it just, obviously, just the construction of the ground, and it's so far away of the pitch. And especially the way West Ham play as well. It's just very flat. So it's one of those games and one of those stadiums where you just have to get through it. But obviously, it's the Olympic Stadium. It's obviously some sort of site, isn't it?
I've actually done a 10K that finishes with running around the running track on the side. I think it must have been before West Ham moved there, but back in the days, a long time ago. Now, I did do a 10K and got to run around the pitch for the final lap, and I will say there's probably more atmosphere that day than there ever is at a West Ham game. I mean, the first half was hard work all round, in fairness. We'll come on to that. But Emery sprung a surprise for the second week running in terms of his selection. Two up front. Last week, it was obviously three at the back. For someone who has never changed the system in the 18 months that he's been there, what's made him do it 2 weeks in a row? Is it personnel that are available to him? Is it something that happened on Thursday night? What's your opinion and what do you know about that?
he keeps saying that he wants to try a different thing because I think he's quite wary of Villa getting figured out. The build-up structure has been figured out at certain times because they're very, within the formation he wants to do, it's very middle-centric. Mm. And a lot of teams like Spurs, I know Villa play different formation, but a lot of teams like Spurs will simply just, even not in Forest away, they will just congest the midfield as much as they can. And then you're solely relying on your fullbacks to provide the width and anything. So he's obviously changed that, Emery, in the last couple of games, trying to keep him guessing. I think he saw also that Duran and Watkins could be really good 2v2 up top. Rodgers would get into some space in behind. Suchek especially, who's had to get reminded a few times to stay goal side. So I think in theory it looked quite good. But anytime I see John Duran on that starting lineup, I just absolutely love it. He is one of my favourite players because he's just so... I just love watching him. Genuinely, I just watched him yesterday. My plan was just to watch him for 90 minutes. Obviously, he came out at half time, so that kind of ruined it. But he's just so great to watch. And I think, obviously, he was milking in the applause, wasn't he, on Thursday? He was the last one off the pitch. He was high-fiving everyone. He even posted Aston Villa on his Instagram, which That's is a rare. Bit... Yeah, exactly. So I thought maybe Emery's thinking, we could talk about the tactical side, but actually, we've got a guy here, John Durrani, who wants to be loved, who can be pretty difficult to stop when he's bang at it at full tilt. Let's just keep him going. Let's just give him a chance, give him that confidence, give him that love and see what he does. And yeah, it didn't pay off, but I would love to see Duran more. Not so much for the football side, he's great at that, but just because he's just a brilliant watch.
Yeah, in theory, I thought it might work because I thought Watkins might be able to drift into that left channel. It's something he doesn't do as much as he used to do but before Emery came in. But I thought Duran would obviously be the focal point of the two because of his size. And West Ham are a physical side as well, so I can see why Duran would play from that aspect as well. And I thought if Watkins drifted wide, and on occasion, actually, in the first half, it didn't work, but they did split Duran and Watkins, and that did kind of open up a pathway for Rodgers, and we saw him have a shot in the first half that he ended up curling straight at the goalkeeper, pretty much. But in theory, I could see that might work, although it was a pretty ineffective first half from Villa. You talk about Duran and getting him in the team for Emery, but are you surprised that those principles don't apply to Diaby? I had someone tweet me yesterday saying, oh, maybe Duran's a bit more high maintenance than Diaby. But I know that Diaby, when he isn't playing, he's not happy, and he can be quite vocal as well around the place. The first time he got dropped, I know that he was very, very upset with that. I think it was the Manchester City game, wasn't it? Or possibly the game before. I think it was Manchester City at home, actually. So he can actually be quite miserable if he's not playing as well. And he played well for the whole game on Thursday. Do you think it's a case of maybe, even, if Diaby starts, we don't really have that fresh impetus from the bench with anyone then?
Yeah, it is. But also, they're different players, aren't they? And I think how he wanted Villa to play is he wanted someone up against Zuma, and Duran could do that, where Diaby would drift into the pockets. And it also would have to essentially mean this formation stayed the same, where I think Emery wanted something different, and Duran stretches it in behind. He drags players with him. Where with Diaby, you always feel like if West Ham do press, if Zuma got tight on him, he probably would have more success because Diaby's stature is obviously as imposing as Duran. So they're completely different players. But I think the issue that Emery had, after he said after the game, that the right side weren't connecting very well, because if you look at even the passing networks afterwards, everyone's quite tight on that side. Obviously, Watkins was on that left channel. Morgan Rodgers is coming off that left into central areas. Well, on that right, it was Konsa who was playing centre-back, essentially. Leon Bailey, about 30, 40 yards ahead of him. And then you had John Duran, who's not getting into that number 10 role, which you would have with Yuri Tielemans or John McGinn. He was stretching it, and that didn't quite work. Bailey and Duran became quite isolated. I think Duran had 12 touches overall in 45 minutes. So that was the issue. And I think in hindsight, maybe if you had a number 10, so if you put Tielemans there and a Robin in midfield or Moussa Diaby, it would have paid off. But Diaby's a great option off the bench. I think having either Diaby or Bailey off the bench changes the game, doesn't it? They're almost like finishers in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Villa started okay, actually. I thought there was a nice control to the game. I thought West Ham didn't really press, which I think suited Villa. They were very, very passive, West Ham, in that first 20 minutes. David Moyes is the type of manager that likes his team to sit in and not really give up space. So I can actually understand why West Ham did that. But I liked what I saw from Villa for the first 15 to 20 minutes. It's almost like they pressed the self-destruct a little bit, because They should, in my opinion, it was a penalty. I can't see how that's not given as a penalty. Just because he's pointing doesn't mean that it's not handball. And yes, Bailey's kicked it at his hand. But the term unnatural position, his hand is in an unnatural position. I mean, we won't spend too long on this, but I'm assuming by you nodding your head, you agree with me that that was a penalty.
I watched it back and I even tweeted, is that handball? I genuinely don't know because I don't know what the handball rules are now. It's so convoluted. But I always think if a person's making themselves unnaturally bigger, it's handball, yeah. If his hand's by his side or he's in a defensive stance and keeping his balance and hits his hand, no problem, not handball. But he's not actually balancing, he's pointing. And that's his fault. It's his fault. And I think it should be a handball because his hand's away from his body. But as I said, it's a bit like VAR, a bit like the rules now. It's changed so often. So many people are changing it. I really don't know what handball is, so I don't really want to comment on it because I'm lost and I really I don't care about handballs or VAR anymore. I'm done with it. I'm so exhausted about talking about handballs or VAR. It's rubbish. It's poor. I think if you look at it naturally, forget all the laws, just look at what constitutes handball. That's handball, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, a little spoiler alert for you. We're going to have to talk about VAR towards the back end of the podcast. We're going to struggle to avoid talking about it. But yeah, I think it's a penalty. His hand's out. And the stupid thing, again, and I said this last week, is I think if the referee gives it as a penalty, it doesn't get overturned as a mistake. So it's just, I find it embarrassing, actually, at this point, some of the VAR stuff that goes on. It really, really
probably
is.
Probably referees won't give handballs because they're relying on VAR because they're thinking, let me just play it safe. VAR will check it on replay, you know?
Yeah, it's no good. And then, as I say, Villa kind of pressed the self-destruct button a little bit after that. Suddenly became, I literally tweeted that Villa had control. And then after that, they decided that they would go against my tweet completely. And we had no control. We were lackluster on the ball, giving it away left, right and centre. And it wasn't directly from giving the ball away, but Villa did give the ball away before West Ham scored. And it's I didn't like that Soufal wasn't really closed down for the cross either. But suddenly we just became sloppy. And Antonio's by far the most alert player in the penalty area. Villa have got three centre backs on the pitch, and and no one's really picked him up or put a challenge in on him. Conte's probably the nearest man, but it felt like that goal came from Villa's own kind of dawdlement, if that's even a word.
Yeah, I think the only times West Ham really pressed was from Martinez goal kicks, and as you said, they didn't really press. I think Villa almost felt we actually got a lot of time on our hands, and it became quite sloppy. I think they're actually better when they're kind of getting pressed because that means they've got to hurry up their decisions a bit more. Like, but even before the goal, I know it didn't come directly, but Longley gets tackled by Antonio, I think. Then they get in a box. Pau Torres just clears it quite desperately, really, out for a throw, and then they score from that. I think I couldn't remember how many times there was just sloppy passes into midfield to no one, really. Like, Pau, Longley, even Conte, they're playing forward passes into midfield and it's getting intercepted. And you think, this is not how Villa play. They're normally often just so secure, very structured in how they build up. It just felt that, they are, like you said, they're pressing the self-destruct button and they kind of just gave West Ham a chance. Even the crowd keep them engaged because for 15 minutes, the crowd, they look like they were fed up. And then as soon as Villa just start giving them the ball, it gives them a chance to get up as well. And I think that's the issue with Villa away. They're doing okay away from home now. It's a good point as well, like I said, on the road yesterday. But I just feel like Villa are quite good at getting the opposition crowd up through just stupid fouls or silly instances. Even, might come on to it, Zaniolo in second half. Just little things that Villa don't need to do, but it just gives the opposition just leaves the door ajar, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Villa are a great team and a great unit. When they're kind of playing well, it feels like everyone is playing well. But when they go into that kind of mode that they went into yesterday around the time of the goal, it just felt like they all do it. Like even Luis starts giving the ball away from nowhere, can't find a pass. I find it quite strange that they all seem to kind of go under together. And not in a way that like they're a terrible team like Villa used to go under back in the day, but it just feel like they all kind of catch the bug at that point.
Yeah, but it's a weird one. It's not like they're becoming scared or shying away from it. They're actually trying to do too much. Like Luis was getting a ball, but he was trying to like make these worldly passes or try and dribble past someone or Moreno with them and they get tackled. So it's not, with other teams, if your back's up against the wall, you think, oh, I don't want the ball, get rid of it, panic. Well, actually, Villa are trying to take a few more risks, and that's where the loss of control comes from, I think.
Yeah, interesting, you just name check Moreno. I love him as a footballer. He was absolutely brilliant last season. I think he's suffering from not having a pre-season, and the fact that he missed probably for the first half of the season with an injury, and then he got a recurrence of that injury. He's just not. I don't like singling people out. I'm not singling him out because I think there is caveats towards it. But I'd kill to see the Moreno of last season, because I just don't think it's there at the moment for whatever reason.
Yeah, I haven't seen the best of Moreno yet. I've watched a lot of him from last season, and whenever it's injury as well, he's a guy that relies on that sprint speed, that sharp acceleration. You know, Emery's talked about it in tactical breakdowns he's done. I think it was on TNT Sport. He did really well.
Yeah, I watched it.
Where he was saying that, you know, we'd like to get Moreno into essentially a left wing position. He's got a good, he can push off, he's got a good drive. But with his hamstring injury, and he went on for so long, you know, 5-6 months he's out for, it does take a while, not only to get up to speed physically, but just mentally as well, to really.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Trust that sprint speed and to, you know, get that, you know, sharp, fast twitch fibres again and again and again. The issue I'd have with Moreno as well, it's not just necessarily his attacking thrust, it's defensively as well. He's diving in, he's a bit erratic defensively. Some of the decision making he's doing, I think you saw that in the first half towards the end against Ajax on Thursday, a few times where he's getting played around. He doesn't look as secure. So even though he's not going forward with the same zest, he's looking a little bit vulnerable going back. He's not been awful by any means. It's just compared to Lucas Digne earlier in the season, where he was being quite safe, you know, really quite reliable. Moreno hasn't quite got that, but you'd like to think you'll see the best of him next year. I don't know whether his performance has been impacted by the, you know, not being having Jacob Ramsey at full tilt ahead of him. He had Morgan Rogers, who still understand the Melania's trade, or and that left side, you know, changed quite a lot, hasn't it? Since he's come back into the squad.
It's felt like our best kind of left-hand side partnership this season has been McGinn and Lucas Digne. You know, honestly, which is a shame, because Ramsey and Moreno were so good last year. They were so critical in what Villa did to pull themselves up the league and qualify for Europe and have that great run of games. And to really, we haven't had either of them for the majority of the season. It's probably 60-70% that we haven't had Moreno for the season. It's probably bordering on 80-85% now for Ramsey, because every time he's come back, he's got injured again. You know, for Villa to be fourth with the amount of players that they've had missing, I get that all teams have had injuries, but when Villa have had an injury, it's been a killer one, like every single time. And yesterday,
they go on for weeks, don't they? When you only think these injuries are 2 weeks, and they end up
where's
being
Ramsey
2 months.
Now? Yeah. I'm sure it'll be weeks before we see Ramsey again. Just seems to be the way with Villa. And I never used to really criticise the communication around injuries, but I think ever since Jack Grealish had an injury that went on for what felt like years, and Dean Smith was very coy about it, Villa's communication around injuries is very, very strange, not like other teams. But, you know, if you think yesterday, there's no Ramsey, there's no John McGinn, there's no Kamara, there's no Buendia, there's no Ming. That's a hell of a lot of players to be missing. And, you know, those players have all got bad injuries.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just remarkable, really, that they're managing to stay in it so often. This is where the Zaniolos, Durans of the world come in, where they've been injured. They've been on the periphery. but they're needed to produce something when, you know, the guys that are reliable are injured or things are becoming quite tough. To have these guys that can just chip in with that goal, win a few more points. Getting to the stage of the season where every little bit helps. Yeah. Every point, every goal, every game we can avoid in a serious injury, I think that they're all key. And you like to think that, especially coming up with Europe, more games coming up and the Thursday-Sunday turnarounds, it's going to be really difficult. And you need, you know, you're going to start looking outside the first 15. You're going to look at, you know, 16, 17, 18 player to come in and make an impact. And I think this is the time now for these players to step up.
Yeah, I miss Diego Carlos off that list of people that were injured. Every time he gets back in the team, he ends up getting injured again as well. So that's, yeah, six players who could feasibly be, you know, they'd all be in the 20-man squad. Most of those would be in Villa's best 11. I would argue if everyone was firing on all cylinders and everyone was fully fit. I was going to say, you know, the last two games, I felt like that's the first time I felt the Thursday-Sunday load as affected Villa. I guess we can't really use that as an excuse in the first half against West Ham because they've played on a Thursday as well.
Yeah, it has. I wouldn't say it was so much the energy of the team. It was just more, I think it was just a general flatness around the stadium and just the game in general. I think stylistically as well, the way West Ham play, where they're happy to let Villa have the ball. And then Villa had obviously two up top, which made it a little bit difficult to adjust to how they usually play. It was just a game where you didn't have the rhythm really, and you know the clear cut chances Villa had in the first half were relatively few as well, so it wasn't exactly goal mouth action either. It wasn't such tiredness, it was just poor decision making overall in that first half.
Yeah. Before we talk about the second half, let's hear a little bit more about our sponsors, NordVPN. 1874 is proudly sponsored by NordVPN, so when and you can't watch it, we want to help you. NordVPN is a secure and private service which works on pretty much any device, including your laptop, mobile, television. So if you want to watch some live content, it allows you to appear like you're in another country. And whilst you're connected, no one else can find out what you're doing, including your internet service provider. Beyond this, the service also has threat protection baked in to protect you from intrusive website ads and malware, which is pretty handy for you. As part of NordVPN support performance for free, this also includes Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. All you've got to do is go to 1874.io/NordVPN and sign up. All the details are also in the description. As always, we're very grateful to anyone that signs up. We know that money is tight, but if you think NordVPN will help you out, it will also help keep the channel running and help us too. So, Jacob, Unai Emery made a couple of changes at halftime. Matty Cash and Moussa Diaby came on. So, do you think that was required? Do you think that was what was needed? Some fresh impetus?
Yeah, I think so. And I always prefer when Ezri Konsa is at centre back and Villa have got an out and out right back. I think it offers you better width. It allows Leon Bailey to come inside a little bit more. Just have to stay on that wing as much. Moussa Diaby as well. I think he's been really good last couple of games, going on rates, making some key moments. He's starting to go on the outside now. Use his right foot a little bit more. I just think it looks overall better balance. I can see why he put Joran and Watkins up top, but if Villa were going to have more possession that second half, they need to go back to how they usually build up. And it just looked much better in terms of the fullbacks. I always think of Villa's fullbacks have a good game. Villa in possession genuinely do as well because they look after it better and it's just better width. Matty Cash and Diaby were the obvious choices, I think, at the break. It was just a case of who Emery would take off.
Yeah, I mean, it was Duran and Longley. That made way. Feels like the first time we've seen Konsa and Torres at centre back for a while. Doesn't it together? I mean, I feel a bit sorry for Longley because he's kind of been asked to do something that's not the easiest job in the world to shift across because he will find the ball on his right foot a quite frequent amount with where he's playing. But I think probably the two full guys at half time possibly were the obvious ones.
Yeah, he's very one foot as well with Longley, and this is the problem with left foot centre backs. Everyone goes, you see two right footers together. You do, but left footers tend to be very predominantly one foot, and it always looks a lot more awkward aesthetically, but also tactically as well. They always want to come inside the pitch. Longley, yeah, he's very reluctant to use his right foot, so you know when teams do press him, you do feel sorry for him, like you say. But I think I was glad that Morgan Rodgers stayed on. There's been a few times where he's come off early in games. He only got another 15 minutes after that, but I think he had a first half where he was getting into some great positions, doing really well at certain points, but just couldn't produce that quality. You know, left the ball behind him, had a tame shot first half. I was glad he came up, stayed on, because I think there's some really good attributes there and some really good positional understanding. So he could have been someone that came off at half time, but I think it was doing a world of good that he stayed on for that hour or so.
Yeah, and he came on for the man that you've ended up writing about this morning, in this morning's piece that's come out in The Athletic. So you've got a half of an article about Duran and half about the man who came on and scored, Zaniola. I've got to be honest, when he came on, I had very little hope that he would come on and impact the game. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, he did come on and score against Sheffield United. So he can come on and score. And he's a really funny one, Zaniola, because when he first came, I felt like he was just getting up to speed, getting up to fitness, but I liked what I saw of him. And then it feels like he's almost just completely lost the trust of the manager. We'll only be thrown on when we're desperate. And I think he probably had got to the desperate stage on Sunday when he did come on. At the moment, he feels like he's just going to come on and get a yellow card every single time, which he did. He seemed to love putting himself about at the moment and getting involved in scraps. This is where Emery's such a good manager, because Zaniolo does come on. He scores the goal. The assist comes from another substitute in Moussa Diaby, who worked the ball really well. I think was it Tillemans who played the ball through?
Yeah, great pass.
To Diaby, and I was a little bit worried about Tillemans playing in the midfield too before the game, and maybe in the first half he did get bullied a little bit, but in the second half, when you're attacking, he's the perfect kind of player to be playing in that position. He really measured that pass perfectly. So this is where Emery comes alive, because Diaby squares it to Zaniolo, and it's a nice little finish with his left foot as well, an old-fashioned toe poke. But what on earth's the situation with Zaniolo? You wrote in your piece, he's probably not going to be a Villa next season, but we need him now. We could do with him scoring a few more goals like that.
Yeah, it is. And you see the goal he scored against Sheffield United, wasn't it? Where he was when he obviously header, but he ran onto the ball, similar to the one he scored against away to Zrinski, where it's like that one touch instinctive. And the problem with Zaniolo is no one really knows what he is now. I mean, he was this prodigious talent before he got his two ACLs injuries. He's lost a bit of speed. He doesn't quite look the 24-year-old physically. He looks a little bit older now. I think he looked a bit of wear and tear has come into that. So he's not got that. He's not as quick. And I was speaking to someone this morning, and they're not linked to Villa, but they referred to him as like a poor man's Kai Havertz. So I don't mean that in a poor way, but
I can say that actually.
He's tall. He's he's not overly quick, but probably Havertz is better in terms of his spatial understanding. But they operate in similar positions. No one really knows what positions they actually are out and out. Probably subbing off the front. But that type of goal yesterday, where he just runs into the box, he box crashes. What Emery loves cutback crosses, and if he can do more of that, I think that's probably where his strengths lie. Because he's not a type of guy that's really intricate. He's not. He's more of a whack it, quite a bulldozer type of number 10. So he can run onto these things. But what I do like about Zaniolo is he does try and make an impact. I think even when he's not playing well, he's getting him some scrapes, and even that kind of gets the team up as well. He obviously had a confrontation with Alvarez yesterday. Should have got booked again, maybe or if he did get booked for the throwing the ball away.
Oh, no, he should have got booked for that.
Throwing the ball away. He just does some weird things, and that's why he's just that eccentric. He's got some great stories about him when he was at Roma and Galatasaray. And by all counts, he's a similar. He rates himself highly. Confidence is not an issue at Villa either. So I'm sure he's probably a guy that comes on with a point to prove and doesn't really. His confidence doesn't diminish when he's not playing, put it that way.
Yeah, he's a bit of an enigma. Got such of the Balotellis about him a little bit. I mean, my mom's Italian, and they can be very far Italian people, as I've discovered in my life. But yeah, fair play to him for coming on and getting a goal. Maybe not advised to be shushing the Villa fans. Probably not
I don't know. Problem is, I don't actually think Zaniolo knew there were Villa fans. Like, he's probably think to anybody that would listen, just shushing to whoever he saw in his eye line and just happened to be Villa fans.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head, though. At this point, every player counts when Villa are really down on numbers. And at the end of the season, every single point counts. You know, those two goals that I've just referenced, they could be mightily important come the end of the season.
Yeah, and they're in games. But not only would they obviously mean that Villa would lose these games, but also the psychological impact it would have on losing. Imagine losing to Sheffield United at home in a game against West Ham, who had just played on a Thursday too, and they were quite, they weren't good either. Just making sure you pick up these points, obviously keeping the score keeping the points table tick over, but also psychologically as well, thinking, right, we're still unbeaten. We haven't lost back-to-back games now. We've got over that. We've got a point. We can now start to keep momentum again. So I think Zaniolo, obviously, he's not overall been a success. Just key moments will ensure top four, top five. And that's what he's done. And that's what I fully expect John Taranta to produce as well at some point.
Do you think Zaniolo's got a chance of coming in and taking that space on the left-hand side now? Because that's where he was playing at the start. He played left. He was playing left-hand side, wasn't he?
Yeah. Emery prefers him as a second striker. He's always said he's the best second striker. And I think it's quite telling that even yesterday he chose Morgan Rodgers to start over Zaniolo. You know, this is Rodgers who's been young. He's been on loan at Blackpool, Lincoln. Recently he played at Middlesbrough over a player that's won European trophies at Roma.
Being at Galatasaray.
School winners and finals, Italy senior, so I'd be shocked if he starts any game, but that way, but if he does, then it'd probably be off the front.
Yeah, I mean, starting him against Wolves in a local derby does feel a bit of a risk with his temper.
doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. we've had enough problems with red card race. I mean, hopefully we'll get some players back in the international break as well. To get Ramsey back would be huge because they've missed him the entirety of the season. As I said, we didn't actually talk about the first disallowed West Ham goal, but I think, to be honest, there's no debate about that. Unfortunately, they are the rules. If it comes off your hand and it ends up in the back of the net, it's disallowed, and that's exactly what happened. So the VAR got that one right, but Villa's defending of set pieces generally wasn't brilliant again. And then James Ward-Prowse comes on, and you think, oh no, we're not defending very well anyway without them having a set piece specialist on the pitch. And then he comes on and swings one in the 96th, 97th minute. And again, Villa are at sixes and sevens defensively. Before we talk about the goal being disallowed, why can we not defend set pieces all of a sudden?
It's happened since the turn of the year, hasn't it? It's been a bit odd, since that Newcastle game, really, when they scored two from in that first half. It's weird. I know Villa aren't really always the biggest team if they've got injuries and stuff, but even the structure of that free kick looks just a bit messy. The line's not right, the positions aren't right. They look caught out at times, and even if you saw it against Luton away, if it wasn't for Martinez, catching every single ball, they would be under significant trouble there, and they still conceded two from set plays. It just looks like they're not winning the first contacts in set plays at the moment. And Austin McPhee's done a good job going forward, but I do feel him and his coach they are having issues defensively, which is not ideal, especially in this part of the season when the margins are so fine and Villa will probably have to rely on set plays because they're not going to have that rhythm or that flow that they had early in the season now.
Sorry, I was listening to what you said, but my girlfriend had just texted me at the time to tell me that the shopping was coming between 2:10 and 2:45, and we've got loads of time here. I had actually remembered that the shopping was coming.
Wow.
So, I feel a bit like Zaniola in the sense of that the trust's been lost a little bit, and I'm not sure why, because I had actually remembered that the shopping was coming. Do you think it was the right decision that goal should have been disallowed? Because I could say Antonio's point at the end of it that, yes, it hit Suchek's hand and then it hit Bowen's head. But it was like a pat. I think if Villa had scored that goal, I think I would find it very difficult to say that they hadn't got to the correct decision, as much as I defended John McGinn last week.
I think it was the right decision. As soon as I saw it, I thought that's handball.
There was a lot going on as well, wasn't there? He did feel something in there. Konsa could have been fouled as well.
Yeah, you could. It's one of those where if it was a handball, then you could look at Konsa getting pulled back or something else. It was just a bit of a mess of a goal, wasn't it? Just like everyone ended up in the goal mouth. But as soon as I saw it, I thought there's something wrong with it, because Villa's reaction, the players' reactions, suggested that there was something wrong, and they spotted something. Obviously, the handball, and this is where it becomes down to the nuances of handball and the rules and stuff in terms of it, coming off Boeing last and stuff like that. But essentially, it does hit Suchek, it's handball, but the fact it takes five and a half minutes, the longest ever, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the longest ever.
Longest ever. It just only adds to the frustration about VAR, and I do feel, if I was in West Ham shoes, and I'd feel unjust because it takes so long, and in the 111th minute, it goes against you. But I think ultimately they went the game for the right decision, the officials.
It's a strange day all round for lot, odd little facts now. Antonio scoring his first goal since August feels like one of the most typical Villa things that I've ever heard in my life. And we had moved away from that kind of thing. But yeah, Antonio not scoring till August. If I'd known that before the game, I would have backed him to score. Probably because, you know, that kind of thing feels like it happens against your team every single time. You know, there's the blatant penalty as well that I think should have been a penalty, as we've already discussed. And a couple of West Ham disallowed goals as well. There's a lot going on in yesterday's game, and the football in general this weekend has been absolutely magnificent. The Coventry game on Saturday was probably my favourite game of the season. In fact, and then I didn't end up watching it in the end, but the Manchester United game against Liverpool as well was crazy. But the important result for Villa away from our own game, where I do think we can foil it under a good point, let's get out of Dodge and take that point, was Fulham beating Tottenham 3-0. Because I didn't see that coming. I like Fulham. I think Marcus was a really good manager, and they've actually got a really, really strong home record this season as well. But for Spurs to collapse and lose 3-0 to Fulham, that's helped. It kind of felt this way. We've made a point in my book.
Yeah, I think it alleviated the pressure on Villa, really, where they thought, you know what, this is an important game, but it's not as important. We've kind of got a bit of a free run at this now, because we'd expected Tottenham to pick up points to establish, you know, to get closer to us. But yeah, you know, they didn't manage to. I was delighted because I actually went out on Saturday evening and I didn't even check the score until later on. And my first thought was fantastic, great result for Villa. But then I thought, oh no, I've captained Heung-Min Son for my FPL.
And it's
done nothing for me. So no, really good. I this is a problem though. I do think Spurs are there to be got at. I know they didn't have Van de Ven yesterday, but that just kind of puts my frustration into a bit more perspective. That Villa went to that back five and were so submissive, but still it's a great result. And you know, as I've said it last week to you, Dan, I was so confident Villa would get top four, top five, because Tottenham and Man United aren't consistent. They just haven't got it in them. They will lose these type of games. Man United will lose some more games. Spurs will lose some more games like this. They haven't got it in them to grind out results. Like maybe Villa have, even though
I do think Villa have, because they've done it numerous times, taken a point when I didn't think they deserved it and things like that. You know, they've come back from behind. Villa have done that.
Spurs and Man United might play better than Villa when they're at their best, but they can't grind out results like Villa got. Villa have got a bit more robust nature about them. So I think they're in a pretty good spot regardless of what happens in the next couple of weeks.
I think it's when you're not playing well, that's the measure of how you are. So I think when Manchester United and Spurs don't play well, they lose.
They collapse.
When we don't play well, we will still pick up wins and draws from games. Yeah. And I do think that's really, really important in the running. Villa have kind of got that mentality, and they know that if they don't play well, they know psychologically that they can still take something from the game, because they're going to Fulham and getting beat 3-0. I mean, talking of FPL, I actually had Mooney's in my team as well. He was probably the only player. I got 30 points from really.
Did you?
He got 13. I was worried. I mean, this is not on topic of the podcast at all, but I used my free hit a few weeks ago because my squad was decimated with injuries, and actually got 83 points from my free hit. So I was really concerned this week that everyone was going to use their free hit. I only had 9 men. I took a -4. I was like, there's going to be big, big problems here. I was expecting to get left behind, but I actually got the more points than anyone in all my leagues from not using my free hit. Luckily, I had Mooney's, because that really did save me.
That's the issue. I had Leon Bailey, so
I put Bailey in as well.
Yes, not ideal, but I think I got 20, but yeah, listen, I'd rather Villa improve their top four hopes. And I'll forego the 20 points I got. So overall, I think it was a good weekend, wasn't it, for Villa? And as I said, these type of games, you'll look back on, hopefully in May, when Villa have qualified, we've got the champagne out, Dan, and in the top four, and you think, actually, forget the great result against City or Arsenal, going away to Goodison Park, going away to West Ham, not playing well, but toughing out these games. It's ultimately been the difference between us getting Champions League and not. So yeah, really exciting time. And I think it's a lot to build, and hopefully international break comes at a great time in terms of getting players back. Emery will come back with new haircut, olive skin tan, and everyone's refreshed.
Yeah, he doesn't go on holiday, Emery. I like to think he's still living. I like to think he's still living at Emerald Heath on the international break. I like the way you said "we" then as well, because you've come to Villa this season as the Villa writer, and you've just said, well, I won't ask you here unless you want to tell me. I don't actually know who you do support. I don't know whether some journals are a bit funny. I won't name any names.
No, it's
are a bit funny about who they support.
Oh no, I think I've said it before. I lived all my life in Southampton, so I've always supported Southampton.
That would have been my guess that you support.
Yeah, it is Southampton, but yeah, luckily they're not in the Premier League anymore, so I've got a new favourite team in the top flight, like you know those kids do when they're trying to be glory hunters. But at least I've actually got a reason now to support Villa.
Yeah, I think it's really hard when your life is based around one team as well. Like, you can't help really, but you know you want that team to do well. It's good for you if they do well.
That's the thing. Like, I know a lot of people are quite sceptical of media, but from my experience, I've covered three clubs, and every single time I've wanted them to do well because one, it makes my life easier in terms of obviously having to, you know, writing really good positive articles, but also you actually get, from our experience, you actually get better viewing when your team wins, and it's more interesting you. Yeah. So I don't know if that's the same with everyone. I don't, because everyone says bad news sells, and maybe that's the case. But for me, you get more comments, you get more reads, you get more, in our case, subscriptions when your team does well. So yeah, the better Villa do, the better it's for me, selfishly.
Yeah, and there's always a load of positive comments. I always read the comments at the bottom of The Athletic because I feel the people that read The Athletic are always quite sensible. It's not like going on a forum and things like that. I mean, if I go on Villa Talk, I'm quite often getting absolutely slated on that, and I absolutely don't know why. But yeah, if you have a look at you know, The Athletic comments, they're always quite reasonable and sound, and there's some decent debate underneath. I always find there does always seem to be positive noise about the way you've wrote articles as well.
They were actually really good. And they give, what I'm glad about, the comments as well, not only on articles, but also during the live match day discussions where the Villa fans debate what's going on during the games. They give you some really good ideas. Like, they say, what are you looking to a certain player, or I've noticed this. And you start, and you actually think, that's a really good idea. Let me explore that. So, in general, I found Villa as a fan base is really good into engage-wise. Of course, there's always some that you think are a bit out there with their views, but I think overall it's been really good. And since you mentioned Villa Talk, I've looked at the last couple of weeks on that as well. And I always try and get the right idea of what Villa fans think, so I'm not completely out of sync with what their feelings. And even that I find really beneficial too. So it's been really good.
Yeah, I'm glad you're still enjoying covering the club. And like you say, hopefully there'll be something to celebrate at the end of the season. Let's touch on the Europa Conference League draw. I look at that as a difficult draw.
Yeah.
Lille have got some good players.
Yeah, it's probably the hardest route, isn't it, to get to the final. Lille are really quite progressive. They're really quite interesting. The Athletic have done a really in-depth tactical piece. Liam Tharm has last week, which I recommend giving you a read. Really positive. I think it's going to be a difficult game. But stylistically, I think it suits Villa. Where I don't want to go too far ahead, but if you look for the next game, probably be Fenerbahce, second legs away. especially after you saw yesterday in Turkey, the scenes of Batshuayi kicking someone.
I did say that.
It does feel like that's going to be you're going to be entering the Lions cage. I think I'll be extremely nervous about that. But Lille's going to be I think it's been a good game from a football perspective. And if they get through there, Fenerbahce or Olympiacos, I think Fenerbahce will. It's going to be an absolute hellish encounter, and I don't know if they've got that in them. But let's see where they are. Hopefully, they're off a fully fit squad by then. It's going to be really difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a really, really tough draw to look through. They're solid, like I say, though. They've got some decent players, Lille, and they're going okay in Ligue 1 as well. And teams like that, you forget, they've just got more European experience than Villa.
Yeah,
that's a fact, isn't it, unfortunately?
Yeah, and only when you go to these games away from home, you realise that all these intangibles actually play a part in it. You know, the atmosphere, the way of kickoff, the preparation times, the amount of media you've got to do, it's all very, very different. And I think it all has an impact. You know, Ajax aren't a very good side. You saw them in the second leg, but the first leg, the atmosphere and the overall just show of it, obviously must have been, it would understandably impact any travelling team, especially a team that's not used to it. I'm really enjoying it. I think Villa have had some really favourable draws, you know, in terms of travel wise. Getting the Eurostar on the match day morning, it's only a few hours, and it should be a lovely trip to Lille, hopefully with a win as well.
Yeah, and I mean, not looking too far ahead, like you say, but that potential game in Turkey, Jesus, that can be an intimidating place to go. As we know, I'm not sure they'll be quite as intimidated by the match day announcer saying "Pow Wow Torres" and everyone having their mobile phone out for a light show. I feel like
do you like the light show?
Two words. No, I don't. I think it's bad. It's a load of rubbish.
Chris Hex spent a lot more money on the fireworks this season. So
I don't mind the fireworks. That's absolutely fine. But the light show is pathetic. I've never seen it anywhere else, which doesn't always mean it's a bad thing if you haven't seen it elsewhere. It just does nothing for the atmosphere.
I've actually got experience. last year when Slams were like on this barren run, they actually had the light show and they called it the best light show in Premier League history. And actually, you know what? I think they lost the game 3-1 in the end, but it was really quite good and it was different. Where this, I don't want to be mean to whoever's organising the light show. I just feel quite just basic, really. It's just like a few lights. It's not. There's nothing else to it. It's not really. Yeah, I thought they'd give it a bit more rev, but yeah, I really like the stadium now. So what's his name? Sorry,
I don't know his name. I'm not having to go at him because he's clearly been told.
I think he's great. I actually think he's great. I think he really gets the crowd up. I actually quite like how he riffs as well sometimes. So I no problem with that. I just think and the fireworks are great. I just think the light show maybe. If it's going to be like that every week, I don't think many fans will scan the QR code if it carries on being like that.
I certainly do. I mean, Villa's media output. Don't get me started on that anyway. But you know, I can't say that I even bother going onto the app. In all honesty, and I'm certainly not going to go on there to get a QR code to get my mobile phone up and shine a light.
I love the build up though. I think the music's great. I think it's loud. Yeah, they've done a good job. I think the trailer's great. Villa's my favourite in terms of pre match music. I think it's I honestly don't get bored of Villa, but I think it's just incredible. And yeah, I just think I think this QR code and the whole light show could. They don't need it, do they? I think the atmosphere's fine before kickoff.
No, and like I say, the fans coming over from wherever are hard. You should be entering the lion's den, not having everyone with a mobile phone.
It's not a Coldplay concert, is it?
I feel like Coldplay would draw the line at doing that. In all honesty, I'm not sure Chris Martin would even have a light show. I would actually love to go to a Coldplay gig, and I've never been to one. But yeah, just please stop the light show. There's absolutely nothing for me, in my opinion. But right, I think my video might have gone a bit funny through that chat, so I'm not sure how much of that end chat got through. But anyway, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, Jacob. I know you're a busy, busy man, so thank you very much for coming on the podcast with me today.
Thank you, my pleasure, mate.
Yeah, do look out for Jacob's work. I'm not sure it'll be as lively in the international break, as obviously there's no Villa playing, but yeah, do watch out for his pieces that will be coming in the next few weeks. So yeah, hopefully you've all enjoyed the show. West Ham United 1, Aston Villa 1, a good point in my opinion. Wherever you're taking in this podcast, if you can do all the stuff that helps the channel, like liking, subscribing, commenting, doing that kind of thing, whether you're listening via audio or if you're watching on YouTube, really, really helps us. The more stuff like that we get, the more places we pop up that we might not pop up in previously. So yeah, if you could do that, that's really, really appreciated. Obviously no preview show or anything of that realm this week because there's no game. But yeah, stay tuned to our socials and we'll let you know when the content's coming out. But if you have got your notifications on and you subscribe, you'll know when the content is coming yourself. Right then, have a good week. And as always, up the Villa.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.